will call the meeting to order and ask the secretary to call the roll.
Curtis?
Present.
Gilbert?
Present.
Hightower?
Present.
Rogers?
Present.
Sharma?
Present.
Scholler?
Here.
Simmons?
Here.
Tedrick?
Here.
And Lockett?
Here.
A quorum is established.
Okay, the quorum has been established. There will be a public question and comment portion available at today's meeting to last up to 15 minutes total, about 3 to 4 minutes per speaker. Madam Secretary, do we have any speakers today?
We do. Our first speaker is Dean Campbell.
Mr. Campbell?
Good afternoon, the Board of Trustees and Chancellor Dunn. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you today. There's been a group of us College of Agriculture alums that have been somewhat concerned about some of the things we've been hearing about the reorganization and merger of the College of Ag with the College of Life Sciences, is our understanding. And some of those concerns are is agriculture is the number one industry in the state of Illinois. It employs and sets up the base for employment for more people than any other industry in the entire state. With that being said, there are two universities that currently have College of Ag, and a lot of the research people, and I've served on the Illinois Soybean Board, who's sent funding to this college. I've been associated with other organizations that do so as well. And that college name means a lot, just in the priorities of that. And so in our discussions of this group, we've come up with the point that we would like to see this possibly put on hold until we have a little further continuity or permanency in the administration of the university, and actually go through and look at the situation maybe a little more in depth with some of the stakeholders, those of us in the country that pay taxes and are concerned about the industry. And with that, just would like to ask that be looked at before we possibly tear apart something. I will also say that it's been brought to my attention that we may have some misconceptions about how that structure will be. We haven't seen a rule book or a set of directions to put that together. So, with that, that could be causing some of the concern and the confusion, not knowing how that will be taking place. So with that, again, thank you. We appreciate any consideration on holding this until we have more permanency, a permanent president, which I understand is here now, a permanent chancellor, possibly a permanent dean of agriculture.
Mr. Campbell, I've been the last 72 hours. I've had many calls from Ag alumni, and including my good friend Jake Rimmelman, who I grew up with. He and my sister in the same class, and I can't remember when I haven't known Jake. And I do believe that some of the information that the alumni have received has been misinformation. And we're going to get that clarified. In fact, I had some things clarified just in the last 24 hours. And I found out that SIU is probably one of the few colleges, universities in the whole country that just has a College of Agriculture.
Yes.
I mean, most of the colleges have College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, Agriculture and something else. The University of Illinois has two other disciplines within the College of Agriculture in their name. I agree that the name that the College of Agriculture needs to be number one in that college, in name, number one name. And as far as just speaking for myself, I think that's going to change. But I think we're going to try to get to you and the other alumni the accurate information on exactly how the new structure is going to be, including I know there's a concern that when you when they go through the national search for the director, it's important that you have somebody that I think Jake referred to me as an Aggie. You want an Aggie at the top, right?
Exactly.
And I think we get that loud and clear.
Okay.
We get that message loud and clear.
Right. Thank you very much for your time.
Our next speaker is Clay Awesome.
Hello. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you today, everyone. Hope everyone's doing all right. So on behalf of the Graduate and Professional Student Council and the students that council represents, I'm here today to express our concerns regarding the search for a SIU Carbondale Provost and Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, and to communicate our support for postponing this search. Since first learning of the search October 1st, we have struggled to understand the appropriateness for limiting the search internally, unsure if the format would provide sufficient time and receive sufficient time to receive applications and receive a sufficient number of applications and prevent conflicts of interest. We have likewise struggled to understand the appropriateness for the timing for such an important hire prior to the involvement of our next chancellor and president, and thus unsure if in this context the solicitation of candidates, their evaluation, and the ensuing appointment for the search would be consistent with that of the future chancellor's and president's expectations and requirements for searches, hires, and appointments to this position. Now, throughout the 53 days from when the search was announced and November 22nd when the search concluded, members of GPSC, representatives of SIU Carbondale's graduate and professional students, have labored to understand the benefits of this format and timing, how they may outweigh any disadvantages and concerns. Our representatives and officers have made careful and patient efforts to explore, understand, and deliberate on this matter. We've engaged in hours of discussion in our council. We've had discussions and communication with Chancellor Dunn. We've met with constituency representatives, attended the candidate forums, and gathered feedback from those we represent, such as the October 16th campus conversation in which Chair Gilbert and Trustee Lockett were present. We've heard from and considered multiple perspectives, recognizing and respecting the differing positions for how to proceed with this search. Nonetheless, in our assessment for the views of graduate and professional students and our council's judgment for the best interests of SIU Carbondale, we continue to have concerns for the format and timing of this search and subsequently support postponing it until it may be taken up again when the search and appointment of SIUC's next chancellor is complete. Thank you for considering in your action on this matter our concerns and the concerns of graduate and professional students we represent.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Jocelyn DeGroot. Our next speaker is Marcus Odom.
I'm Dr. Marcus Odom. I'm a professor and the Deloitte & Touche Faculty Fellow in the School of Accountancy. I also have the privilege of serving as the representative of the Faculty Senate for the College of Business, and I'm on the Chancellor's Planning and Budget Advisory Committee. I'm here today just to make a few comments. I come before you quite frequently, and I appreciate this opportunity. I think this forum is a great opportunity for you to hear what some of us feel is going on at the university and to be able to share what we want you to know about us. Today, I've got a couple of things. One, I was actually one of the members of the Presidential Search Committee. I am excited and pleased that the board selected our first choice from the committee. I'm excited to get Dr. Mahoney on campus and into the system. I'm excited about what things I foresee will happen with the system based on what I know of him and looking back over him during the selection process. So that's one good thing. A second is addressing the provost search. I was actually also on that committee. We had a very well-rounded committee. I wanted to come forward to say that I thought the process was handled properly. I think the time frame that was given for an internal search was more than adequate enough time. I think that the individuals, and there's several on campus that I think have the qualifications and the ability to do the job. In my opinion, I think that we only had one applicant because others may have looked and said the applicant that is, or the person that's in the job now, is doing a good job, and probably did not want to go through the problem of going in and putting in an application, knowing that they were competing at someone that was well qualified and doing a great job during the interim period. We had great discussions at the search committee meetings, and we actually went through the process as if it was several candidates. We had forums for students, we had forums for the faculty and staff, got feedback from them, met and discussed, and put forward the name of the candidate that we felt was qualified. In my opinion, it would have been tough for anybody to have better qualifications and be more right for the job than the candidate that we had. So I am fully supportive of the process and think that the process is followed appropriately and that we have the best candidate put forward for that position. Finally, I want to also say that I'm excited that we'll be moving forward soon on our chancellor search. I know the ad is out, and I know that we have a great committee that is going to be the search committee. It's starting to feel good around here. We've got permanent president coming in, a permanent provost coming in, and soon to have a permanent chancellor, things that we haven't seen here in a while. And things that I think will not, Dr. Dunn's done a great job. John, don't throw anything at me. Dr. Dunn's done a great job, but it is nice to have someone in a permanent position as people from the outside are looking in. And so it's an exciting time, and I see the reorg is coming together and seems to be falling in place very nicely. So a lot of things are happening, and so I see a bright future for the system, and I appreciate you have given me this opportunity to speak.
Any more speakers?
No, there are not.
The next item on the agenda is enrollment plan update for Edwardsville and Carbondale. Chancellor Dunn, you want to, since this is Carbondale, you're here in Carbondale, you want to go first, and we'll have Chancellor Pimmer.
It's really your decision, and we'll be happy to go first. And I'm going to ask Merritt to come to the podium to provide an update. Share with you, I think, some of the very positive news that we're experiencing now, and have to agree that the university community, faculty, staff, and others are working very hard, not only in recruitment, but in retention.
Thank you for the opportunity to provide an update on our recruitment and retention efforts since the report that I made in September. Our entire admissions team, including our Vice Chancellor, our Associate Chancellor for Enrollment Management, Director of Admissions, Associate and Assistant Directors, Recruiters, Admissions Counselors, as well as our outstanding faculty, staff, and students, have been working very hard day and night to turn around our narrative of recent years. And on behalf of the entire team, I'm glad to say that I can stand here and share some good news with you for a change. So in terms of my presentation, there are two parts. One is highlighting all of our efforts and then kind of ending with our outcomes. So to begin, we have really ratcheted up our recruitment efforts. We have added more staff in St. Louis and a regional recruiter in Chicago. We are planning to add one more. We are in the process of doing that. And we have seen an uptick in the number of applications that we have received from the St. Louis metro area as well as from the entire state. In the Chicago area, even though we're just a few months into our recruitment cycle, we have been able to make quite a bit of advances in securing 52 to 63% of the applications that we actually had this past year. We are also, all of our recruitment staff as well as student telecounselors are making very sort of concerted, intentional efforts following up with every prospective student, every inquiry, anyone who's applied. And just to sort of go beyond these words on a slide and these numbers, I want to share a quick story of the kind of effort we're making and the kind of expectation that we have of our recruiters. So we had a recruiter who reached out to a student who hadn't finished the application and was saying, you know, we need you to submit your transcripts, and left a voicemail, then followed up with a text. And the student reached back and said, you know, I've been ill, I haven't been able to respond to you. So the recruiter said, I'll be in your school in 2 weeks, I need to see you there. The student was still sick, couldn't come, but sent 4 of his friends. And by continuing to stay in touch with the student, a month later, the recruiter was able to have this student come to the campus. But the student came with his friends, and all 5 were really excited with their visit and asking, when can we enroll? This is to highlight that, you know, beyond the text on this slide, these are the efforts that are going on. And so we have a relatively new staff, they're well-trained, they're clear about the expectations, and these calls that they've made, the 4,236 calls, 897 texts, are while they're on the road. So they're making the visits, and they're continuing to stay in touch. So this is kind of a broad stroke. But in beyond these visits that our counselors are doing, we are having students come to our campus. And once again, we are pleased to see an uptick in terms of the number of students coming to our campus. So there are various ways in which students visit the campus. They can come sign up for a day visit, or they can come to our open houses or SIU day. And so we have seen for both our open houses that we had this fall, there was a 50% increase in the number of students with SIU day and a 17.84% increase in our attendance of the open houses. And as a follow-up, we checked to make sure that students who are coming are actually making a connection with us, and we found that 50% had applied for admission. Once again, a quick story to highlight these efforts. I was at the open house, and a mother spoke to me, and she said, you know, I just have to share this with you. I'm an employee of Illinois State University, but my son just wants to come to SIU for aviation. But that's not the reason I'm speaking to you. I want to tell you, you all have put up an amazing, amazing show. The experience has been so positive that I'm really happy that my son is coming to SIU. So that is very encouraging for us to know that those who are coming to our campus are really feeling that difference. We are trying to make that difference, and then if the recipient feels that difference, we feel we have made sort of a connection here. And we are also increasing our efforts in addition to our regular SIU day, which is for high school students. We are adding a transfer day, and this will be open to any community college in all of Illinois or anyone who can travel to our site. So besides bringing students to our campus, we are also going to school, and so we are listed the numbers of high school visits, community college fairs, and this is done by the admission staff. But beyond that, all, as I mentioned at my last presentation, there is a culture change. Faculty, staff, and students on our campus are saying, this is something that all of us have to do. It's not just admissions has to do it, but we all have to partake in this effort. And so we have had visits by the recruitment retention coordinators in each college and faculty who have voluntarily gone to college fairs so that they can recruit directly, to add to the efforts that the admission staff are doing. So in following up with students, we're also sending them packages of material, and that each of you should have in front of you, like that white large envelope. If you look inside, it contains all of the material that we've been sending students via mail. So besides the phone calls and the texts and the emails, they also receive things by mail. Parents get some pieces. We have information for students in terms of affordability as well as frequent touches. So there are many touches that we have so that we stay connected with them. And we have also checked out what difference can it make if you do program-specific marketing. So for instance, in forestry, we have seen an increase from 18 applications last year to 53 just by doing targeted marketing for students who have indicated interest in forestry and in other disciplines too. So these are things that we're doing, large scale, small scale, everything. So we're basically firing from all cylinders. A recent market research survey indicated that we need to do a lot more work with high school counselors who may not always be recommending us to their students. So we said, okay, how do we tackle this? So we're targeting the high school counselors now and having meetings with them in Chicago and St. Louis, and we're trying out a pilot project where we're saying a high school counselor can nominate, a student, up to five students, for a scholarship of $1,500. So this is getting high school counselors sort of excited about and invested in SIU and recommending their student that they think would do well. And this is a new initiative we just started. We've already heard from six high school counselors, and we're following up with them and also reaching out to the rest of them. We are leveraging technology and social media as strategically as possible. We have a custom view book where a student, as soon as they express interest in any of our majors, within minutes they get an email that allows them to look at all the possibilities with that major. We have implemented a new CRM, a customer relation management system, that allows us to communicate more effectively with our students. We are working on setting up and starting our 24-hour chatbot. We're sort of working on some technicalities, and we expect to launch it very quickly. This would allow prospective students who have applied to us and have questions for those questions to be answered 24/7. Our transfer student portal is in process, and we expect to have it ready by March 2020 and to make that smooth for transfer students. And in terms of our social media, we're really sort of monitoring who's responding to what, and working with that information. We're also pleased that we have included our students from the Mass Communication Media Arts College to help us in terms of determining the kind of content that we could use in terms of our social media outreach. So the question is, you might wonder, so what? You're doing all of this stuff, what does that mean? And this is the part that is very encouraging for us. So when we see a direct relationship between effort and outcome, it kind of makes us feel that maybe we're onto something. And so here we are pleased to share with you our first-time freshman applications for fall 2020. We've seen an increase in terms of the applications of 27.3%. And then these applications, and in terms of actionable, where the application is complete and we can make a decision, we've seen an increase of 14%. And we are trying to really increase this number by having our recruiters work intentionally with every single applicant to get them to complete the process so that we can make decisions on their admission. And our admits have gone up by 21.3%. This is for first-time, full-time freshmen. We have similar numbers in terms of the transfer students. We believe that our transfer admitted students will go up once the semester gets over, because then students who are in community colleges will finish the semester and then submit the completed applications, the latest transcripts. And we see a similar trend in the off-campus. So this is in terms of recruitment. We know that just having admitted students is not the end of the story. We know our yield rate has been between 20 to 30%, and so we are doing our best to yield these admitted students. So not only are we reaching out to them, but again, it's amazing how supportive our faculty, staff, and students are. They are signing up to make phone calls, because last year we found there was an 8% increase in the yield when the prospective students received the phone calls. So not only are our faculty, staff, and students signing up to make phone calls, but they're also writing to every single admitted student in terms of postcards, encouraging students to certainly come to SIU. So the last piece of information that I'd like to leave with you are the efforts that we are making in terms of our retention. So one new initiative that we invested in since Chancellor John Dunn has been with us is this idea of reverse transfer, where we reached out and visited with six of our area community colleges and partnering with them so that a student who comes to us without an associate's degree completed and gives us permission to transfer back the credits that they did with us, they can get their degree awarded, their associate degree. And you might wonder, like, why would we put all this extra effort? And the reason is this. The focus is on the student. Because many times students drop out from our university and then they have nothing, because they didn't complete their associate's, they didn't complete their bachelor's. This way, at least they would have something. And for the community college, it increases their number of completion rate. So I think it's like a win-win for everybody. And that's something we have worked hard with all these community colleges, visited them, created the MOUs. They're all ready. We're ready to sign a few of them. I think one coming up next week and the others lined up shortly after that. We initiated a new First Saluki Center. We received a $500,000 grant from the foundation. And so that has been up and running. And as you can see, we have so many programs. There's a First Generation Fridays. We have the FAFSA workshop, Resiliency and Academic Success workshop. We have 150 visits by First Generation students. We have 5 peer mentors and 80 mentees. And they've sort of met for, 4,300 minutes altogether. And this is just the first semester. So there's a lot more that we are excited about in the coming semesters. Our University 101 enhanced version, this semester we offered 50 sections for every single freshman who came to our campus. And just this week we're collecting feedback from them in terms of what are the things that they really loved about the course that we want to keep, what are their suggestions of what else that we could have offered for them. We've been able to connect them with peer mentors, with the faculty in the departments, connecting them to research labs or creative activities, as well as university resources, registered student organizations. And we've heard from them that they really love DegreeWorks, which is part of the advisement experience where they can keep track of their own progress and becoming sort of familiar with it from day one. And we're sort of making sure that our advisement staff is full and responsive to students. Okay. So with that, I'm going to stop here and we'll be glad to answer any questions. You also have like a one sheet that gives kind of the highlights of the presentation.
Dr. Kamara, are these percentages better than a year ago?
Yes. So the background is the numbers that I've given you is the amount of increase at this time last year. So like 38 weeks out or 37 weeks out at this time last year.
Any other questions? You go right ahead.
I just want to add one thing. We're also looking very seriously at what we would call windows of opportunity. Recently, California has put out a very interesting document where they've essentially concluded there's no room in the inn, either at the university level or at the college state level or at the community college. So we've exercised an opportunity there to spend some time because of another trip that I had, an alumni event. I drove over to Riverside and met with the Riverside Chancellor. That's a Riverside district, and they have 40,000 students, and their diversity measures are really good. And there's so much potential and possibility. So the idea there is to remind them that you can come to SIU Carbondale at the same tuition rate as any Illinois resident. And furthermore, we can do some of this distance delivery. Their chancellor was very responsive to that because they too, as Mira indicated, it's all about the student. And they're worried about finding opportunities and places for their students. And we have room. And we're very interested in working with them. If I could send a plane out there, I'd do that and bring a whole bunch of students back for a campus visit because we know that seals the deal. But I was very pleased with the chancellor. We've now corresponded back and forth by email. It's all about trying to make it more personal.
I want to just commend you personally, the chair and I. Late summer, we asked for a meeting on the SIUC campus with Chancellor Don, Dr. Kamaroji, as well as the admission staff, and we wanted a clear template as to how you were planning to, number one, what your expectations were for enrollment as it parallels, and to ensure that it paralleled with the board's goal as one of its key initiatives, improve, increase, enhance enrollment. And to see you come in today and you talk about the many changes that you've made, it's been a holistic approach. And as we said, and I don't know if Dr. Allen is here. Is he here, Dr. Allen? Want to thank Dr. Allen for his outstanding work as well. You know, when we look at the three areas that we challenge you on, establishing clear standards and expectations. Two, we challenge you on, we want to see efforts that yields measurable outcomes. And today, and just I think 2 weeks ago, we said we want to start telling our story. And we want to tell our story not in a dissertation format, but in a simple, one-page statement.
Yeah.
So when we send this out to the media, they can help us tell our story, and we want to applaud you today. Moreover, the chair and I, we spent time in Springfield on yesterday, and we had along with the new president, and one of the key areas from that meeting was the governor wants to see, the legislators want to see, what are we doing to increase enrollment in a measurable form on each campus in the state of Illinois with measurable outcomes. And again, as the deputy governor said, Mr. Chair, he has to give a report every 2 weeks?
Every 2 weeks to the governor.
On what we're doing. So we are doing the kinds of things now that make it very clear that we're not just talking the talk, but rather we're walking the walk, and it's a holistic approach with a unified effort. So, Chancellor Dunn, I personally want to, this will be the last time we, you only get one applause, you know that. No. We want to thank you for leading this effort along with the staff here on the Carbondale campus so that we can be able to tell the story. And I'm sure that the media will help us tell the good story. You know, they're not shy in telling the negative stuff. We know that about the media. They have a job to do, and if we give them the tools for which to report, then they will tell that story very accurately, and from that point we began to get momentum. I attended a function last night, and I heard the same comments again today, that there is a change of attitude and an atmosphere around this campus. This was the function that I attended last night here on the Carbondale campus, and I heard the same comment again today. We have momentum going, but we have to stop and thank you folks for the efforts that you put in. So thank you, Provost. We appreciate your efforts and the staff.
Thank you.
I do have a question as well. I do have another question.
Go ahead.
Being a research institution, we say we are. What are we doing for the graduate applications? I understand that those are. I think I asked this at the last board meeting. What are we doing for the graduate students?
Yeah. The reason I didn't have the graduate application numbers is that we are in the process of. If you saw, I had said that we have Slate up and running. So we are in the process of moving out of Hobson's Radius into Slate. And for the graduate application, for undergraduate, we had to prioritize. So we got that done. In the next 48 hours, we're going to finish that. And so I didn't want to give inaccurate information. And so in terms of the graduate applications and the actionable applications and the admits, we'll have an update as soon as that process is done. But we are doing everything possible to increase our graduate enrollment also because we are a research university. And some of that effort happens more at department or home level, program level. For instance, like in the last few weeks, I've received at least three queries from students saying, are you still looking for graduate students? Can I work with you? So that's the kind of outreach that happens at a programmatic level. And there are different deadlines for graduate programs. For example, for some programs, December 30th is the deadline, some February. So the numbers may not always like reflect as at the undergraduate level in terms of comparisons. So we are making every effort even at the graduate level.
And Trustee Breon, I think given your question, we will provide you with information so that you will have that.
Yeah.
And because it's a fair question. That's
yeah. All right. I'd also like to make one comment. I wanted to commend you on the work that you do as well, and you guys have done for the campus. I especially like the piece about the first-generation college students and your focus on them. I'm a first-generation college student, so that's just something that I think is really neat to implement on this campus, along with the high school counselors and doing the whole scholarship program. That's also something very interesting. So thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Dr. Allen. Before you came in, Dr. Hightower gave you a compliment, but you weren't here, so you lost it.
Thank you anyway.
As Provost Cobb comes up, I don't think, and I think that the report we get from Edwardsville is going to be similar in the increases. And I just want to say, after especially after meeting yesterday with the deputy governor, that In combination of what this campus is doing and Edwardsville doing in increasing enrollment, cannot be lost that we now have a governor and legislature that is concentrating on education, both at the elementary, secondary, and higher education, because I think they see that education as one of the critical elements to stem the tide of exodus from Illinois. And that's going to do it. The work that you're doing in getting this out and getting these increases in applications, I think we need to give some of the credit to our governor and legislature who are now focused on education. Provost Cobb.
Do you want to say anything, Chancellor? Okay. Can we?
This is yours, correct?
Yes. All right. And just use that? All right. So I just want to echo your comments. I think that I'm hoping that this presentation solidifies a really strong and positive story for the system. I think the two campus stories in combination really suggest a positive trajectory. At least I hope that's the takeaway after I finish. So I'm really going to focus on freshman applications. That's largely what we talked about in planning for the session. I'm happy to talk about graduate applications and other kinds of strategies, but today I'll mostly focus on traditional first-time, full-time freshman recruitment activities. I'm going to start, though, by talking about what's a positive story but presents challenges. So you can see that over time, the number of undergraduate degrees that we award annually has increased. We're really proud of that. Part of that is a function of having record enrollment at around 2014, 2015, but it's more than that. It's also the growth of the RN to BS. And so you have more students graduating in a timely way. And so because of those data, we now are the largest producer of baccalaureate degrees in St. Louis, in the St. Louis region. That's something we're incredibly proud of, but when you also graduate that many students, that means you have more spots to fill. So it's a great story and an interesting challenge to try to tackle. So you wouldn't want it any other way, but I like a good challenge. I think you can see our applications are up, and that's a good story again. What I will say is I'm going to try to temper expectations, though. I think one of the things we've learned along the way is that having an increase in applications alone is insufficient for growing enrollment. So you have to move from application to admitted student to a springboard deposit to yielding the first day of classes and then keeping them past 10th day. And then keeping them after that and moving them to graduation. So we are cautiously optimistic because we see this nice bump in applications. You can see 34% growth overall in applications, but also an increase in out-of-state, an increase in-state. And then, so that's those first two lines. You can see that the two numbers don't add up to that 8,935 increase at the top. There are students who don't report their state, and so we work on those applications, and over time they move into one of those slots. But we have about 185 or so that just we don't quite have the information. That's the reason those two don't quite fit. Then you can see Illinois broken out. We were able to put a new recruiter in Chicago. We had had a longtime recruiter who moved on to another job, and so it's taken a while to sort of rebuild relationships in Chicago, but I think we're starting to see the impact of putting, you know, an additional recruiter there and building back some trust and relationships that are just critical. Obviously, building application pools in Madison, Monroe, and St. Clair County, counties are that's incredibly important for our institution. One, I think it's just part of our mission to serve the local communities, but I think, you know, when you look at our data and you see how strong the yield is from those counties, anytime we can boost applications there, we're likely to, we have a greater chance of yielding those students than we do, say, when we see that increase in Chicago. We just don't yield at the same rate from Chicago as we do in our local three-county area. But the more good news, the admitted student number is also increased, right? So with admitted students, we have a completed application, and we have a transcript and a $40 application fee. So we're farther along, right? Each step is just a little bit better indicator of where we are. Here we see a 36% increase, and again, you see the same kind of pattern, and we're always looking to kind of check and see, are those areas where we yield higher, are those increasing? And the more ground that we can gain in any of those areas, I think, is what we try to do. Last year, about this time, we were falling behind in some races and ethnicities, and given our commitment to diversity and serving the region and the changing demographics of the high school graduating population, we wanted to make sure that we had diversity among the groups of students we were representing, we were recruiting. And so this year, you can see that we have increases across all subgroups, so all of our targeted geographic groups and across races and ethnicities. And I think that's something that's important to our campus and to make sure that that we are attending to. One of the things I just want to mention is that, you know, this time last year, so it was about December 6th, when we launched our mobile app, and that's where we saw a bump in applications last year. So this year, we don't know, because we had the mobile app from the beginning, how much of this just occurred earlier, or will it sustain in terms of, you know, just continuing to grow over the remainder of the period. So just something to keep in mind. One of the things that I'm particularly interested in that I think is important to us is we're trying to constantly figure out what we can do better. We know that recruitment is an incredibly competitive arena, and we want to do our best to be competitive there. So we are taking deeper dives into understanding the students who apply to SIUE, are admitted to SIUE, and choose to go someplace else. What do we know about them? So this is just a sample kind of overview of the students who applied to SIUE, were admitted to SIUE, but chose to go to Illinois State. So Illinois State moved to our number one competitor for fall 2019, so using our student tracker data. I don't like losing students, just in case you didn't know that. And so they actually took a larger share of our students this year than they had previously, so from about 4% to 6%. And then on top of that, they moved to that number one competitor slot. So we wanted to know more, not just about ISU, but any institution where we're losing out. What can we learn, and then how can we keep digging into that so that we can refine things? So here you can see the average institutional aid that we offered, predominantly white students, predominantly female students. Top two majors were business and nursing. The ACT range tended to be lower than our average ACT range. And then the part that really stood out for us was this sort of moment of pain when you see that almost a third of them visited our campus. We're really proud of our campus visit programs. But, you know, here 32% of these students came to our campus, then chose another place. And so we really want to think about what's the profile of this student, and what did we miss out on? What could we have done better? And we can do this same kind of deeper dive with any of our competitor institutions. And so we're working through our top 10 competitors right now just to see what is it that we could do differently so that we could make sure that we put forward the best case possible for the student. I always want students to choose the right institution for them, but I want them to have the best information about SIUE and what we can offer them in order to do so. And if there are ways that we can improve our approach or our scholarship strategy or the way that we provide information about our majors or contact with our faculty members, we're ready to do that. So anytime we think about enrollment, we're also thinking about is the profile of our student body changing. Right now, if you look, I think just the important takeaway is that the shape of those lines, the distribution is largely the same, right? Suggesting that right now we would anticipate that our average ACT score would stay roughly the same. You see, you know, generally the same kind of distribution. And I think, you know, while we want to serve all the students along that spectrum, we are also clear that we want to make sure that we're admitting students who we can help meet where they are and progress toward graduation. So one of the things we watch closely is springboard deposits. This number doesn't become really important until spring, but we start watching as early as we can. And so seeing that we have more deposits than this time last year, it's a good sign, right? Springboard, once a student deposits for springboard, we're very likely to yield that student. But you know, we still have to maintain that momentum all the way through the spring and make sure that we do so. Just a few things I wanted to go through quickly. You know, there are a number of things that we've done so that we continue to do. Our on-campus visit programs and transfer programs, we've had 8 different ones. We've hosted over 1,100 individual students and their families. Our preview program in particular has grown by about 15%. It's nice to go into the Meridian Ballroom and just see it packed with students and their families. And so we've had about 6,703 people, individual students, visit the admissions office for other kinds of tours. And so that's a 3.5% increase over this time last year. Sorry, you can't see those. It looks better over here than it does here. So our admissions staff continue to do all the work that admissions staff folks do, right? So those important high school visits, over 400 high school visits, more than 660 college visits, and they've attended more than 280 college day or college night fairs, and they've met with more than 11,000 prospective students. Those admissions counselors are just incredibly important. They are the ones who build the relationship with the student to get them interested. The faculty and staff then have a responsibility, but I can't say enough about the work that the admissions counselors do, from calling, texting, talking with them, knowing their story, and then advocating for them in a number of ways. We have 26 on-site admission programs where we go to the high schools and admit students on-site. I think that's incredibly important, particularly for first-generation students and other historically underrepresented groups. It's a lower-stress way to meet students where they are, help them navigate that process, and help walk them through the college admissions process, and we can admit them on-site. That we yielded 577 admitted students to that. That program's in its 15th year. What we hear from high school counselors is more of that. Can that come to our school? You never hear, we don't want it. It's always, can you come, can you come, can you come? We're continuing our HBCU initiative. So we, a few years ago, started a program where we were working with HBCUs. You can see some of the universities we've worked with previously and continue to do so. And what we're trying to do is build pathways from their programs, their undergraduate programs, into our graduate programs. So we've hosted visit days. We visited there. We sent specific programs to campuses. And we will also bring students and advisors from HBCUs to our annual graduate school research symposium in April. We've also worked with veterans and military. You can see the number of events that are specific to military and veteran recruitment. You know, this board passed a special tuition rate, and so we want to make sure that people know what's available to them through our institution and guide them through that process of utilizing their benefits and achieving a higher ed credential or the next credential. And just because I want to make sure that I don't just stop the story with traditional undergraduates or transfer students or graduate or professional students, for our campus, we recognize that one of the ways that we can make a tremendous difference in our region is to address the needs of the 400,000 plus adults in the metropolitan statistical area who have some college and no degree. That's a tremendous opportunity, we think, to take those students to degree completion. So we have been building online degree completion programs. We have invested in new positions that we will be posting in the next few weeks, and developing a marketing and outreach plan to sustain those programs and make sure that we have the infrastructure available and ready to meet the needs of post-traditional students. And I think it serves the goal of, you know, the 60 by 25 initiative for the state of Illinois, as well as helping to move people to greater economic self-sufficiency and in disrupting the kinds of challenges that they have. So we see this as something that we can do well, maintain the integrity of our programs, still have a strong undergraduate traditional on-ground experience, have strong graduate programs, but still meet the needs in critical areas. So happy to answer questions, talk about anything else you'd
any,
like.
Any questions? Yes, Trustee Curtis.
Provost Cobb, outstanding presentation, as was the Carbondale presentation, and congratulations
you.
On your results. One program you highlighted, and you mentioned your competition with Illinois State University, was nursing.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly a huge unmet need in downstate Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and there's a demand for nurses. What we're seeing with high school seniors is they're looking, the students with the higher ACTs are looking at which schools will give them a guaranteed admit to the College of Nursing as a freshman,
mm-hmm.
and they'll quickly go in that direction to those schools that have, so that may be a consideration when you're looking at nursing over Illinois State.
Mm-hmm. No, I think we've certainly heard that as well. We've tried to expand our direct admit program, to your point. I think there are other things we can do. I met with the Dean of Nursing this week. We talked about what I think is an exciting proposal to develop a 3-year degree program. It's a little challenging to figure out, you know, all of the clinical placements along the way, but I think we're close to something, and I think that would have tremendous appeal to some high school students and their families as they're looking and thinking about the next step. If they thought that there was a way to become, to be in the field, in the profession in 3 years, that might help mitigate some of that competition as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just one last comment. Again, Mr. Pembroke, Provost Cobbs, thank you for the outstanding work. And again, just want to repeat the same comments about SIUC, and I want to say the same thing about SIUE. You know, as we've met with Chancellor Pembroke, Provost Cobb, their staff, they had a very clear set of goals, and I was really impressed by something that Chancellor Pembroke stated. You meet every 2 weeks. He meets with the key people, and they discuss, okay, pretty much as the deputy governor said, every 2 weeks, what are you doing? How are you getting it done? Tell me what the yield effects are, okay, over what time period? And I have to say, when I heard that yesterday, I thought about you, Chancellor Pembroke, as to how you know that certain things are being done. So again, great job, great report. And Provost, what would you like the headline to read tomorrow? That's always enrollment for the system.
Oh, for the
come
system?
On, we're going to help write this.
I'm not good at a headline. But,
how about when
SIU system has tremendous momentum? How about that?
What is it?
Tremendous momentum.
That's it. Media, where are you?
I will say this is a really important month, so a great story would be terrific.
Along with her, moving on up.
So again,
and I, for both campuses, be prepared for our new president, because every 2 weeks you're going to have to give a report to him on enrollment management, because that's what he has demanded at Winthrop and gotten results, and you're going to be it's going to be a pleasure working with him, guarantee it. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is enrollment plan update for Edwardsville and Carbondale. The allocation methodology discussion. Trustee Tedrick.
I was going to say we just went over that.
I know we did.
Well, from a historical background, let me back up and talk about why the committee was formed. This board voted to... for funding allocation on new money, 50-50 for both campuses, some time ago into last 3 years. So what we were charged, our committee was charged with, is what do we do at the end of those 3 years and what kind of model can we use going forward? I was asked to chair this as chair of the finance committee. Vice Chair Hightower was a part of that committee, as was Dr. Stuckey. The two chiefs of staff from both the Edwardsville and the Carbondale campus, and the financial leaders from the three campuses. So the model that we developed, which Dr. Stuckey will speak to here in a minute, won't take effect until the third year, but this model, it will give us time to test it. It'll give us time to see if there's anything out of whack in it. We were very cautious about being fair and equitable. We think the model will do that. So with that, Dr. Stuckey, would you like to present? Or Dr. Stuckey? Oh, there he is. Okay.
I didn't see you. Thank you. I was hiding. The Illinois Board of Higher Education actually was on the forefront of developing cost studies in America. I think it probably was among the first states where it developed a statewide cost study of its universities. And a cost study produces the cost per credit hour by program and by student levels. And the cost per credit hour has been used as a measure of the cost of higher education since the early 1900s. It was developed basically out of some work that Dr. Jim Allen can give you an interesting history about, by the Carnegie Foundation wanting some sort of measure of the effectiveness of higher education, because it was Andrew Carnegie was about to donate, I think, $10 million to fund retirement benefits for professors at colleges back in about 1910, because there were no retirement systems. Anyhow, it had that interesting history. Illinois Board of Higher Education, by the 1960s, it became common to understand how one could develop cost per credit hour by discipline. That is, how much does it cost per credit hour to cost to teach your courses, and by level of students. And the level of students by that time had become defined as lower division, distinguished from upper division in undergraduate, lower division being primarily the South, meaning the South, freshman and sophomore years, and then all other upper division would be all other undergraduates, and then distinctively two graduate levels, roughly the equivalent of master's and doctoral. And in those cost studies, it was found consistently, although the numbers are all over the place. You will find no two cost studies give the same numbers for two different universities. There's wide variation for a couple of reasons I'll explain. But it's commonly understood that the cost goes up as the student level goes up. The cost for a PhD student may be 6 to 10 times higher cost per credit hour than it is for a lower division student. It also is higher for certain disciplines. For example, the sciences generally cost more than some of the other disciplines. So they are all over the place. The basic cost study starts with a faculty salary in a classroom. And it takes that faculty salary and distributes that faculty salary over all the courses that that faculty teaches. And there are a couple of ways of doing this, but I suspect that the most common way to do that is the way IBHE does it, and that is to spread that by the credit hour value of the courses. Once that's done, then those are spread to those courses, and then they're spread to the students in those courses. Those students, of course, are either lower division, upper division, master's. Those credit hours follow those students, and you have the building then of a matrix that gives you cost per credit hour by student level, by discipline. As I said, IBHE was on the forefront of doing this. They published their first study in 1965 and 66, probably some years before other universities even knew about how to do a cost study, and they've been doing that study ever since. You might recall that when Chair Gilbert announced the appointment of an internal working group to develop a funding proposal, he mentioned that an annual IBHE cost study was available and had not been used so far in the work that AGB had done. Now, several months later, the working group has developed a proposal for you to consider. It depends upon that the data in that cost study. The group not only found that the cost study was useful, but in my view, I think in particular, it actually describes a roadmap as to how to calculate allocations between the campuses. It provides a table in there that does a theoretical calculation that in a perfect situation, how much money would each campus have. Doctor, that allocation method and a very brief summary of the cost allocation method is in a booklet before you titled this. Dr. Hightower, I won't go over it intentionally at this time. Dr. Hightower asked that I develop a description of the allocation methodology and the IBHE cost study. That is contained in this book. In particular, he asked that I describe the various costs that go in to the allocation. That is done. If you approve the allocation methodology tomorrow, I intend to put that, with Misty's help, put that on the SIU website. It'll be available for view by the public. I forgot what my next point was. My next point was that the study group did recommend that only the calculation for direct faculty salaries be used to allocate costs by student level, by enrollment level. The main reason for that is it's kind of obvious, I guess. Faculty salaries, the number of faculty you need and the salaries for that depend directly on enrollment. There's a direct correlation between that and enrollment. Some of the other costs that need to be distributed in addition to faculty salaries are department and college administration, libraries, computer centers, student services, campus administration, physical plant. There'll be differences and disagreements as to how they might vary with respect to enrollment changes. Those need to be discussed. And as part of this committee, the recommendation, there is a core calculation using the data out of the cost study that's recommended. That is to use that table that describes in the perfect world what would be allocated, proportion will be allocated based upon direct faculty salaries, and for the next steps to be that a expansion of the working group or a change in the working group be made, and that the president and the two chancellors be joined into a group, including myself and the financial officers of the campus, and begin to examine this and to improve it, to understand it. The cost study, at least at the institutional level, at the system level, has not been used before, to my knowledge. I've been here a long time, so I can't say forever, but it's not been, in recent years, it's not been discussed at the system level. So I suspect that in system level discussions, there's going to be a a number of discussions needed just to pick up speed and develop a common understanding of what are we talking about, what does the cost study do, how do we use it, and to examine the data to see if we believe that the data are comparable. There are questions about, well, should this program be in or out? Is that program in or out? Is that correct? How do you report this? How do we report that? And that sort of thing. So the suggestion is that the team and a team be developed with the president in charge of the two chancellors and begin to discuss this and work together to settle all those issues, to come to an agreement, to improve it, and have this ready after this three-year period works out. By the way, there is an example calculation in your book there that if it were applied right now without any changes, without any answering any of those questions about should it be changed slightly, it comes up with approximately a 50-50 calculation. It's a 1% off one way or the other, but that doesn't matter because there are questions that will probably need to be answered that have more relevance than that 1%. So it already does predict what you're doing is that the allocation of new money ought to be in roughly a 50-50 ratio between the campuses. That, of course, is subject to change as time goes on if the enrollments of the campuses continue to change. Hopefully, from what we heard earlier today, we'll see an upward swing in enrollment on both campuses. That model will accommodate it. And I have done, as I said, the first cost study that was performed in 1965-66. I have copies of all the cost studies back to that time annually. I've looked at every one of them. I've tested this ratio, and it is highly, highly consistent over that period of time in measuring what the relative ratios of enrollment were on the campuses, and of course, what the differences of mix in programs were. So I think the team is going to be able to use it, be able to improve it, and in 3 years we'll be successful in beginning to implement it.
Question.
Any questions?
Yes, I do. So this is you're only using this methodology though for new money, correct?
Correct.
Not the existing budget for either of the universities.
Correct.
Or the campuses.
Right.
Is there, and there's this three-year window, I'll be honest with you, why 3 years and why are we not addressing the entire budget, the entire funding allocation?
I think that was a board decision.
We as a board want our new president involved in that. We want him to study it and make recommendations back to us on the allocation.
But the three-year mark, I guess, is my question.
We're through 1 year. So we got 2 years left.
And more importantly, there was such a discrepancy prior to making a decision this year there was going to be a 50-50 split with new money until we needed to get started with this process and move forward with some clear direction going forward, and that's basically it.
Is Trustee Curtis?
I really had a hard time understanding what your allocation is here. So you're saying that we're going to use a 50-50 split on new money for 3 years, and then I just heard Trustee Tedrick say 1 year's passed. So you're saying for...
It started this present year. It started this present year, so it's already been allocated. So through 2022, 50-50 will be used.
Okay, so that's 2.5 years from now is what you're saying fiscal year-wise.
And this fiscal year has already started, so it'll be the next two fiscal years.
So yes. You have a university here that works on high operating leverage. You've got a lot of fixed cost around this organization in both Carbondale and Edwardsville. You understand that your enrollment today in Carbondale is substantially less than the infrastructure that was built for this campus. 2.5 years to me in higher education is an eternity. And so why in the world would we be making this decision for 3 years when we have a new president starting on March 1? It just seems like we're tying the president's hands for the next 2.5 years, because we have to make some significant cuts, and it just seems like it insulates it too long for. I have no problem with the new money, but I'm worried about the existing operation.
I'll turn to the two board members who were on them.
The new money, the 50-50 for the new money, we established that as we came on this board.
I have no problem with new money.
Okay. But it's the president's job, and that's one of the things we said up front. The new president's job is to take a look at, and I'll just give an example. I think SIUC was established for around 26,000 students. The new president and the staff will need to take a look at the footprint and the overall operation, but you've got to give that person an opportunity to take a hard look at the overall operation to get us to a point where the money is somewhat balanced on this campus. And so that was the goal there, to give the new president an opportunity to study.
But that's 2.5 years, so in the current scenario, when next year's budget comes out, what is the president's latitude here with making dramatic cuts to some of the fixed costs?
As far as I'm concerned, if when he comes on board, takes a look at it, if he wants to start making, you know, sees areas he can make cuts, he doesn't have to wait to 2.5 years. You know, the previous president, and I didn't find this out till later, this campus was prepared to make substantial cuts, and they were not allowed to go. They were not allowed to make it, where Edwardsville did make cuts. And we didn't, I was on the board then, and we were not aware of that. Now, when the new president, Dr. Mahoney, comes on to get a new chancellor, as far as I'm concerned, they don't have to wait 2.5 years to start making cuts. If they see areas that need to be making, they can go back to what the plan was under the previous president and look at that window and try to make cuts. But well, let's give the new president and the new chancellor the opportunity to look at that. Chancellor Dunn?
Yes, oh, I'm sorry.
If I may, though, you have a methodology, and I don't know why we need 2.5 more years. I think that, I mean, President Mahoney is ready to hit the ground running. I think that, you know, perhaps a year makes sense. Perhaps a year, because we've been talking about this now for 2.5, 3 years. I think it's time to address it. If we don't address it, then it's stagnant. It doesn't promote fiscal responsibility. It doesn't promote growth. It doesn't help with morale. So I think it's time that we address it. I agree that the new president needs some time. I'm willing to give him that. But between the work you've done with the methodology and the new president coming on, why can't we make that a year?
I don't think we ought to make it a year. I think that we ought to keep the, and my recommendation is that we keep what we established with our legislators, that we new money coming on, it would be 3 years, 50-50. It gives the new president an opportunity to get in and take a hard look, get a new chancellor in, working with the current chancellor here, and look at the overall scheme of what we're doing. Now, no one is saying that he has to wait 2 years to do that, but give him that time period to get his feet wet and really get a handle around. And that's why we are insisting with this modification on the makeup of this committee, that not only the president be part of and direct this committee, but the two chancellors be heavily involved. And that is basically our rationale for doing it that way. And that is what we sold to our legislators when we started talking about the 50-50. Furthermore, I think that both chancellors were very much involved from the onset of 50-50 for 3 years, hold harmless at Carbondale, and with the new president coming on board, and we haven't even hired the new president yet. He won't be hired until tomorrow. We haven't hired a new chancellor yet. So no one is saying it's going to take 3 years. But we're saying that after 3 years, at that point, we are expecting some changes to be made with the footprint. And that's basically
what we've said all along.
Yeah, I would concur that we did agree to that, and I thought it was responsible and rational. And Trustee Curtis, in response to your question, that meant a shift of $1 million this year from Carbondale to Edwardsville. Okay. That was a rule, it was the understanding, and we did that.
Well, say that again. I'm sorry.
It was a shift of $1 million on the 50-50.
On the new money.
On the new money.
I'm worried about...
Well, pardon me, may I finish a minute? The comment I want to make, though, is that I think a new president will raise another question, and I'd be really curious about your comments, Dr. Suki. There is a Carnegie classification that is pretty sacred in higher ed, and we're classified as a high research university. And Edwardsville has a classification, too, and they're proud of their classification. But the question is, how do you compare within your classification? So I think the trustees have to decide whether you want to have a high research university or not. That, or another example would be that our friends to the north, the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, get special funding because of their agriculture, both for their ag experiment stations and for extension. Well, I don't argue about ag experiment stations. Those are very important. But extension, we're all doing extension. I can tell you one of the first things that would have to go is the service we provide through extension. That's a cost to us. I don't know that those are adequately reflected in anything, either for Edwardsville or for Carbondale. So anyway, I'm sorry. But
you're not going to keep your Carnegie delegation if you're bankrupt. And the point is, we got to cut some costs down here. And I just worry about, and I'm talking about university-wide, I just don't want to tie the new president's hands over the next 2.5 years. I don't have an issue with new money, but I'm very worried about creating an environment where for 2.5 years, we're going to be in a world of hurt in 2.5 years if we don't make some very steep cuts. We have high operating leverage on this campus that was built for a university twice the size.
If our new president comes to us and says, I've looked at this and we need to change this allocation, this board would be supportive of that. There is no doubt about that, and that's what we expect him to do.
But same token, the new president needs an opportunity to get his feet on the ground here. The new president needs some direction from the board that you need to take a hard look at the footprint and make some cost-conscious decisions about the system going forward. Again, that is the president's needs to be the president's directive, and it will be. But again, I just to address Mr. Shoulder's comments, no one is locking him in and said, this cannot wait. I hope he doesn't wait until 3 years to start saying, we need to take a hard dive into cost economy, cost efficiencies, and make some tough decisions with this system going forward.
Dr. Mahoney is well aware of the situation. I've discussed it with him. He knows when he hits here, he's going to have to take a look. There's no, we're just giving him this flexibility. But if he comes to us and says, "Hey, we need to eliminate this, eliminate that. We're too big a physical plant here in Carbondale, and we need to shut this building or that building and lay off this people or that people," you know, we're going to take a look at it. There's no. We just want to give. We don't want to put him under a so tight a time gun that he doesn't properly study what needs to be done. He's well aware. He's read the AGB report. He knows what's in it, and he's gonna hit the ground running. But there's nothing to say that we have to wait if he comes to us beforehand and says, "Hey, we need to make this adjustment and that adjustment," and we'll do it.
At the risk of getting into weeds here, I had a meeting with him this morning for an hour. It was more of a, I think it was intended for an introductory meeting. We did get into business, And we discussed that one of the first things that he needs to do, I need to assist him in doing, is to assess the financial situation on both campuses as quickly as we possibly can and make that report to the board and make recommendations accordingly.
Yes, Chancellor Pembroke.
Vice President Stuge, I want to ask two clarification questions. Am I right in looking at the report that because of the complexity of what IBHE does, the data sets that are used for the calculations will always be about 2 years behind where we are? So we're in 1920 now, and we're using 1718 data for this calculation.
One or two years.
Okay. The second thing has to do with what Chancellor Dunn was addressing and the missions of the two institutions. As you understand the way that IBHE analyzes undergrad beginning, undergrad upper level, category two, which I think is master's, and then the fourth category, a doctoral, does that address the mission question as it relates to the different kinds of enrollments, or it overlaps partly but is not the same thing? I'm just curious as to your opinion. Yeah. if this formula in some way addresses the mission issue.
It intends to, and I think the group has to say, does it do that? Mm-hmm. I've put one issue on. I won't say that is an issue that is a problem, but it does appear to me as if the costs at the graduate level are not as high as they ought to be. There's something in the way this is put together, and I've suggested it's all done on a credit hour basis. The only discretion you have at the doctoral level is the thesis credit hour assignment to students. I don't know how that works. I don't know whether, I think we need to examine and say, we're confident that captures the cost at the doctoral level. I'm not saying it does or doesn't, but you, the new chancellor, new president, need to take a look at that with some good solid data and say, yeah, we're confident this captures what you're looking at.
Trustee Rogers.
My comments kind of echo Trustee Curtis and Trustee Scholler's just with concerns about the timeline. I feel like since I joined on July 1st, we've just hit the ground running. We've been really proactive about things. And so 2.5 years does seem, like he said, an eternity for higher education. So I don't know if that's something that we could consider maybe a year and a half. As we said, Dr. Mahoney, if he were to be hired tomorrow, he is aware of the fast-acting things that we need to do and what our system needs. So I don't think that would necessarily be something that he would struggle with if we would give him a year and a half timeline.
May I make a comment? I'm going to get deeper in the weeds here, but I think we're mixing two issues. We're talking here about an allocation of new money from the state. On the other hand, the issue that really is serious is, do we have to take serious cuts fairly quickly? The two aren't necessarily intertwined. They're a little bit dependent on each other. But one's an allocation discussion. The other one's, do we need to make serious adjustments? And as I said, I think in my discussion with Dr. Mahoney, he agrees that we need to take a very serious look quickly at the financial status of the campuses and make adjustments if it's necessary. And that's a different discussion, I believe.
Trustee Scholl.
No, what I think the discussion, in my opinion, is the base funding and the allocation of it and the timing of it. My suggestion is, and I'm not opposed to your methodology and the proposal for the new money. I'm with you, Trustee Curtis. My suggestion is that we need to be looking at base funding, and we just don't need to put a time limit. Why is there any? The lawyer in me is saying, leave the time limits out and give ourselves flexibility. The language of that resolution just doesn't make sense. Give us the flexibility. Give the new president the flexibility. That's my point.
And that's what we were.
He will have the flexibility.
He does have the flexibility.
He will have the flexibility.
I don't like resolutions that have time constraints on them that we voted on.
Trustee Curtis.
As I said earlier, my issue is not with new money. It's with the current budget. And as long as our president, as he arrives, he needs to develop a cohesive leadership team, create clarity of purpose, and then begin to work on these issues. I'm confident he will do that, but we really need to look at the existing money. I don't feel, as a member of the Finance Committee, I'm getting good analysis of the financial results. And one of the things that I see looking through it is we went through a lot of fund balance over the last year on this campus, and so it's just a crisis that we deal with some of the issues of the existing operation. I'm not worried about the new money or this proposal. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. Thank you, Dr. Stuckey. Okay, I move that we take a recess and move into executive session meeting in the Vermilion Room.
I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, exactly.